This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. School is about to get underway. I thought we'd check in with Nate Bowling, who teaches American government at Lincoln High School in Tacoma, 2016 Teacher of the Year. We've talked a couple of times. I visited your classroom. Very impressed. And one of the keys to being a great teacher, Nate, you told me, is not so much the syllabus or the books you assign, but it's having that relationship with your students. It's getting them motivated. So I want to know, I mean, and you're clearly politically involved based on your Twitter feed with what's going on in America right now. So I want to know, how do you handle that in the classroom? You are not a Trump fan.
So this current moment is really tough for me. A lot of the policies the president has undertaken are deleterious to my students. I have a large population of students who are immigrants, and America is currently seems very hostile to immigrants. I also have a large population of students who maybe come from mixed status families where they're documented where their parents are. I also have students who maybe are LGBTQ. And so like in the current political environment, like they feel kind of under threat. But like for me, it's not my job to preach my politics to my students. So I actually maintain a pretty neutral political stance. Like at the end of the year, most of my students think I'm a frustrated Republican. Like honestly.
Really?
They do. But they also know where I stand on matters that impact their lives. And so
like, what is at stake for them as students? I mean, have you found that what's happened in the past year and a half has affected their lives?
No, absolutely. Imagine coming home from this broadcast and everybody you know has been rounded up and taken away, and you don't know where they're going to be, where they're being held, and how to get a hold of them. Like, that's a reality I've had students face. And so, like, it's my job to teach these students, but, like, I also need to get them to focus on the minutiae of government and these very, like, tedious things that I want them to learn where their brains are 1,000 places. Like, learning is really hard when you have chaos in your life, and so much of Trumpism is chaos.
In the case you just brought up, I hadn't thought of it that way. The idea that you could come home one day and all your friends are gone. I don't know if that's literally true.
Well, not your friends, but, like, your aunt could be gone, your uncle could be gone. Okay. I've had a situation where a young lady's grandmother was just gone.
Okay. But you're teaching American government, and of course, America is the land of the free. So then for a student that has happened to, what do you say? Because they're going to call BS on what you're teaching them, aren't they?
One of the most interesting things that happen in my classroom every year is for exchange students to sit in American government class and hear the gap between American rhetoric and reality. I had a student last year from Brazil who said all year, like, in Brazil, we are known for corruption, but it's the same here. We were going back and forth about like the way interest groups work and campaign finance law. And he was just blown away by the idea of like super PACs and how money could be contributed to political candidates through dark money and through bundling and through all these mechanisms. And so, you know, it's my job to teach students and be able to endow them with an understanding of government, but also a sense of like activism and hopefulness. In times like this, you can get pessimistic. Like, you essentially have a system right now where we have underfunded schools, where systems that provide healthcare to low-income families are under attack. And it's my job to teach them, like, why those things are happening and how they're happening.
And yet, those families, those kids' parents, chose to come here, in many cases, right, to escape, I presume, something that was worse.
Absolutely. No, so this is the conflict. So this isn't your question, but like, so every year my wife and I leave the country and go abroad for a month during our summer because we're teachers. Mm-hmm. And this year I went to Cambodia, Thailand, and Malaysia. If you want to appreciate how awesome America is, leave it. Right? Like, leave it and get away and see how much better our infrastructure is, see how much better Black Americans live than Black people live in other places and maybe treated. But also, if you want to see the gaps between like what America is and what America could be, leave it. And so that's the thing for me is that like I'm a patriot. I want America to live up to its values. I want us to live up to – I think the 14th Amendment is like the most solemn promise that any group of people has ever made to another group of people. Like, we will give you equal protection and due process of law. I just want us to mean that. And so like that gets me painted as a radical sometimes. But like that's – I believe – maybe I'm crazy, but I just believe in the American dream.
Yeah. Well, that is a good point. I certainly experienced that during some of my early trips abroad to Eastern Europe back when it was, you know, a dark, dank, and scary place and the old Soviet Union. But I also just came back from a trip to Northern Europe where I was in Sweden, Denmark, Estonia, Germany. And, you know, Europe is not a hellhole. They got great roads. They got great facilities. They have great economies there. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. So What do you hope your kids come away with after a year with you in terms of how they will read a newspaper, for example, or you know, go online and search for information?
Sure, newspapers. What I really want students to walk away from me with is like an understanding of government and the idea that like government matters. Like their calculus class is important, but like calculus can't draft you into the military. Calculus doesn't create housing policy. Chemistry can't tell you who you can and can't marry. That's what government does. And I'm really passionate in class about getting students to understand that, like, the power of government isn't about the presidency at any given moment. It's actually about what's happening in Congress, because in the end, Congress has oversight over the president. And frankly, government's also about state-level policies. And so, like, here in Washington State, there's a lot of policies that could protect families and improve the lives of families that are actually state-level things to be hashed out, things about infrastructure, things about education, things about healthcare.
Do you encounter kids who don't think voting matters?
I do, and I try to break them that really quickly.
And how does that process go?
Well, so it's if you explain the Electoral College to somebody, they say voting doesn't matter. And so instead of fighting them on that, I say, okay, let's buy into that faulty premise that voting doesn't matter for the Electoral College. Voting matters for governor. Voting matters for the House. Voting matters for the Senate. Voting matters for the school board. And I'll give them like really concrete examples. Like, do you like school lunch? Do you like the way athletics are funded? Like, what are some improvements that we brought to your life by government? And that's why voting matters.
And by the end, they're all trying to run for student council.
Huh? So we have a thing, right, where like a kid tells me it's their birthday and I ask, did you register to vote? Uh-huh. And if they say no, I'm like, nobody cares. Right? Like, I'm not going to lie. I vote shame. Like, I want all my students to be voters. We did a voter registration drive last year where my students registered like 200 voters within the building. And like, I don't tell them how to vote. Like, I am a prolific and like opinionated person online. And some students cross over and see that. But like, my classroom practice isn't about that. My classroom practice is like, I want you to be engaged citizens. If you're going to be a conservative, I want you to be an informed, thoughtful, like George Will conservative and not a belligerent, like, commenter on some like fascist website. And like, that's the goal for me. Like, I just want to build a cadre of more thoughtful young people in Tacoma who can help transform the city.
Let's talk about your profession. I just heard that the teachers in Edmonds have come to a new deal under the McCleary decision, which pried loose more money for education, which provides a starting salary of $62,000. And the pay scale goes up over $100,000 as you earn more experience and teach longer. Other teachers are going to want that. And what do you think is going to happen?
So there's something pernicious that happened in the McCleary deal. And if you think back to the legislative session, it was a kind of dead of midnight negotiation with not a lot of transparency. And what we're seeing is districts like Bellevue and Edmonds that have higher property values are able to offer their teachers higher salaries. And our districts, which are further south, have lower property values and also higher population of students of color, like Kent, Highline, and My Tacoma, offering teachers 3.1% raises. So, like, I'm not stupid. I'm obviously somebody who knows the craft, and effective teachers are in demand. And like, what we're essentially doing is we're creating a competitive marketplace where effective teachers and teachers who have the means to move are going to be drawn to move to places where they feel more economically supported. Right. And in the end, that's going to disadvantage our lowest income students.
But shouldn't it also draw out of the private sector more people who have the talent to teach but didn't want to take a vow of poverty to do it?
No, absolutely it should. I would say this. My philosophy in education says that our most needy students need our most effective teachers.
Yeah.
The salary model that the legislator has created through this McCleary funding plan isn't going to do that. And so essentially,
I'm a little confused here.
Sure.
Because this idea that Edmonds can afford to pay $62,000, others cannot, was exactly what the McCleary decision was supposed to remedy.
And
because it's where, I mean, in the next phase, doesn't it take away some of the ability of those property rich districts to artificially boost salaries in this way?
So here's what happened is that there's a salary adjustment based on the perceived cost of living where you are. Mm-hmm. And so places like Edmonds, Bellevue, and Seattle are getting an 18% salary adjustment for teachers there from the state allocation. And places like Kent and Highline and Tacoma may be getting 18%, but some are getting 12%. And so essentially this is
– I didn't realize that was going on. That's faulty because people commute.
Correct.
No, I mean, you, teachers aren't simply drawn from the immediate area of the school. They drive great distances sometimes.
You are correct.
So, if you're making substantially more in Edmonds than in Kent, you're going to drive from Kent to Edmonds.
You are correct.
Hmm. Did you bring that up?
So, you know, I would like to live in a world where when I spoke, policy was made, but that rule doesn't exist. But it's something that's going to come up. Like, we're going to see strikes in the South Sound, and strikes only harm students. Like, my students need to be in school. For many of my students, like, if they are not in school, they're missing meals. We know that some students are, like, school-dependent for learning. They don't have strong home support. But at the same time, like, teachers can only make so much sacrifice. And, like, right now, last night, I had a friend reach out to me. She's a kindergarten teacher, first-year teacher. She's trying to find an apartment in Tacoma, and she can afford $1,100 in rent. So first off, just think about the fact that in Tacoma, Washington, there are apartments. Well, you basically can't find an apartment for $1,100. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, and that $1,100 is over 30% of her salary, which is like the guidelines the federal government has. Like, if we want quality in the classroom, we have to pay for it. And I get frustrated because I feel like that we're willing to make the investments in schools, but I feel like the policies that are being created out of Olympia right now, aren't leading us to the outcomes that we need. Like, the McCleary fix is not a fix.
So you think the legislature needs to change this?
I do.
And what should they do instead?
So this is going to be unpopular with some folks. I feel like the original sin of school funding is actually that school funding is tied to property values.
Yeah.
And what happens is communities that have higher property values can then generate more revenue. So essentially, like, imagine that you live in a place where houses are worth $200,000 and in a neighboring district houses are worth $500,000. A 5% property tax in the lower income neighborhood is going to generate less money. And like, that's the original sin. Funding education based on property taxes disadvantaged low-income communities.
Yeah. So that would mean some sort of income-based tax.
And we know that's dead in the water non-starter. Here in Washington State for a host of reasons, which are all foolish.
Yeah. If you suppose you did some kind of statewide bargaining so that instead of trying to create a one-size-fits-all formula, individual school boards and teachers could account for these things like how far people commute and stuff like that, and then focus not so much on poaching teachers from other districts, but poaching teachers from private corporations. I mean, people who, again, have that talent to teach, but found they could make so much more money in the corporation that they didn't want to. But, you know, if you raise that salary by 10 or 20,000, it might be enough to draw them back in.
So I don't hate the idea of statewide bargaining. I just have questions about who's working on the formulas, because it's kind of the first crack at statewide bargaining is what we have right now with the regional salary adjustment models. And, like, it was done poorly, frankly.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think the legislature can handle that?
So one thing that I've gotten in trouble for in the past is not having solutions. I'll say mm-hmm. this. I think we need more educators running for office. Okay. And I think that the solutions that are coming out of Olympia are coming from people who have never done the work.
I see. Is that going to be you someday?
My spouse is not seeing Nate run for office.
Not allowing that, huh?
Yeah, no.
Oh, well. So I'm afraid you're stuck in the classroom.
Well, but I love the work, though.
Educating students.
No.
To be a responsible citizen.
I am not stuck in the classroom. I absolutely love the work.
I know you do.
I've honestly been going in because, you know, it's summer still. I'm back from my trip, but I've been going in, and it feels good. I structure my life again. I walk in the classroom. I just see potential.
Yeah. Nate Bowling, 2016 Teacher of the Year, teaches American Government at Lincoln High in Tacoma. Nate, thank you.
Thank you.